Good morning and welcome to Up to Date special coverage, Coronavirus in Kansas City. I'm Steve Kraske. First up today, a conversation about the federal response to COVID-19 with Missouri Senator Roy Blunt. Later, Mayor Quentin Lucas will join us to talk about his emergency declaration that limits gatherings in Kansas City to no more than 10 people. Is it working? But first this morning, KCUR health reporter Alex Smith joins us to talk about a new report from ProPublica that looks at how ready hospitals are for this expected onslaught of coronavirus cases. Alex, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
What did this report conclude, Alex?
So basically, the big takeaway from this report is that a lot of hospitals, I mean, nearly every hospital in the country, would really potentially be overwhelmed by the high numbers of COVID-19 cases that are projected to take place in this country, you know, within the next several months or within the next year.
I can't help but wonder, what did it say about hospitals in the Kansas City area?
Well, in Kansas City, like in most places, we would be projected to run out of beds. A study from Harvard looks at 9 different scenarios, checking out different combinations of the percentage of people who would get the virus and over what period of time. There's sort of a middle of the road situation where 40% of people would get the virus over 12 months. In that case, the research estimates that we would need about 50% more beds than we have in the Kansas City area, and intensive care units would probably be even more overwhelmed.
The report also said that pressure on hospitals will vary dramatically across the country. That surprised me a little bit.
Well, yeah, that's true. I mean, there's actually parts of kind of central and western Kansas which would fare a lot better than we would, even though they are considered healthcare shortage areas. Just the small populations would mean there would probably be a lot less demand on resources in those places.
What's your takeaway from all this, Alex?
Well, I have spoken with hospitals, and you know, they generally don't give a lot of concrete numbers for things like hospital beds because they say they do have a lot of flexibility to expand when they need to. And Harvard researchers say, you know, their research only looks at existing capacity. Hospitals can make changes like stopping elective surgeries and trying to free up beds that would otherwise be occupied. But right now, I mean, there are still some situations where we can stay within the current number of beds. I mean, if we can keep the infection low, down to like 20% of people in Kansas City, and stretch that out over at least 12 months, we could still be okay. But right now, the only way we can do that is if people are really taking social distancing seriously.
That's KCUR health reporter Alex Smith. Alex, thanks very much.
Thank you, Steve.
Missouri Senator Roy Blunt joins us now to give us an update from Washington on the pandemic. Senator Blunt, always nice to have you here. Welcome back.
Hey, Steve, always nice to talk to you. I'm glad to be with you for a few minutes today.
I don't need to tell you there's a lot going on right now. Let's begin with the Senate's decision to pass that multi-billion dollar emergency aid package yesterday. The legislation is known as Phase 2 in Washington speak, and it included free coronavirus testing, 2 weeks of paid leave, and paid family and medical leave, and it boosts food stamps. The Senate has some reservations about this measure. What were they, and what was your own position on it?
Well, I think the reservations were to just be sure we had something here that was reasonable and that worked. The original delivery system from the House would not have worked. This was where you'd get tax credits, and of course you get tax credits at the end of the year. That clearly doesn't solve the problem for a employer of fewer than 500 people, everything from a 10-person restaurant to a 500-person whatever. But to say we're going to solve this at the when you file your taxes next year would not have been a solution. I think we came up with a pretty good solution here. And, you know, our challenge right now is we need to make a lot of decisions, but we need to make them in a hurry. And we need to do the best we can arriving at the right decision, understanding that the worst thing to do would be to not decide. So we've basically had two bills now. One was the original $8 billion bill that really focused mostly on the healthcare delivery system, trying to accelerate eventually having a something that would be a for the virus that would actually be a cure, and then the treatment areas and getting supplies to state and local communities and all those sorts of things. And then the bill yesterday, about $100 billion, mostly focused on keeping people on the payroll that they're already on for a couple of weeks of either self-quarantined time away or time away because your business essentially has been quarantined. Somebody has said your restaurant is going to close, your baseball park is going to close, whatever is going to close is going to close. And now we're moving on to the bigger of those packages, bigger even than the package with President Obama in 2008, which was about $800 billion, or the $700 billion package 2009, rather, or the $700 billion package with President Bush the year before. We're looking at $1 trillion to try to keep the economy in a place where once we get through this, the economy will not have lost more ground than is absolutely essential.
Let me ask you about that, Senator. We're talking about phase three now, and again, it includes these direct payments to Americans, and this plan is getting so much attention right now. The last numbers I saw, the bill will contain $50 billion for the airline industry, $150 billion for other distressed sectors of the economy, and two rounds of direct payments to Americans of $250 billion each on April 6th and May 18th. Are those numbers still holding, or are they shifting here as negotiations continue?
I think those numbers are still holding to the extent that as you talk about this and as people think about this, of this $1 trillion package, half of it would go to individuals that are at the low and medium low and low middle income sectors of our economy. People who make, say, $75,000 a year or less are the likely recipients of this money, and it'll have some stimulative effect. I've never been a big advocate of the idea that just giving people money actually stimulates the economy, but this is a case where just giving people money actually helps them get through a crisis that they had no realistic way to prepare for, to make their payment, to do whatever they need to do to continue to keep themselves and, if they have a family, their family together. And so half of the $1 trillion would go that way. We don't want to get into a discussion here. Well, you only want to help big businesses at the top, be sure they're still solid when this is over. We want all job providers to be solid when this is over, but half of the money designed to go to the individuals we just talked about.
And Senator, as you know,
roughly that we talked about.
Senator Schumer this morning is saying that this is not enough money directly to Americans. Do you see any wiggle room to provide even more money going forward?
Well, one thing that is totally predictable here is that no matter how much money you come up with, some people will say it's not enough. What we've got to do is let the process of democracy and legislating work here so that we reach a conclusion that a majority of us can be for, that the president will sign. So, is he mean a percentage? It's not enough, or if is half of all the money we're going to spend going directly to low income American families and low middle income American families? Is it that half of what we're going to spend is not enough, or what would actually make this all right, and how do you eventually deal with that as a ongoing load on your economy? Another thing to remember here too, Steve, is unlike 2008, where the economy had in 2008 and 9 a significant systemic problem, we haven't had that problem. Mm-hmm. So part of what we're doing on the other side of this is not trying to give businesses money, but trying to figure out a way that we can help them have the liquidity they need at a time when their expenses still go on, but their income has stopped, You know, these businesses a month ago were generally incredibly solid.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you loan them money that they'll be able to pay back? And that's the other half of this is almost all a discussion of how do you loan small and bigger businesses money that they will pay back over time, as opposed to how do you just send money to the American individuals that may need it. And I think that's a pretty good balance of
mm-hmm.
going ahead and giving money to people who are going to be most likely stressed by this in ways they wouldn't have otherwise. This is money that they don't give back. This is giving people money and then creating a source of money that will be paid back for big business and small business that need to come out of this hole and also need to do all they can to keep their employees continue to be employees with benefits as opposed to people that get laid off that may or may not ever go back to work.
Senator Roy Blunt is my guest. Senator, how satisfied are you with the congressional and the administration's response to this crisis? Is anything missing?
Well, I'm sure something's missing, but generally I think I should be, and you should be, people looking at this should be satisfied that while all of these have a clunky start, that we've gotten to about the right place where state and local governments are being empowered to make the decisions that they will better make. State and local healthcare delivery systems are being empowered to do that, even though on most of these state and local health departments are paid for day in and day out, about 50% by federal money. But the decisions are going to be made better in Missouri and Kansas by people in Missouri and Kansas than they are in Washington. I think Mayor Lucas is a better person to decide what happens in Kansas City in most cases, along with the council, than anybody in Washington would be. And Governor Parson in our state is doing what he needs to do. And one of the things he's doing is leaving a lot up to mayors and school boards and others to decide what needs to happen where they are. So I think we're in about the right place. Some things we're going to look at long-term, supply chain and other things on, have we become too dependent on other countries on component parts of our healthcare system? We're going to be looking at that, and we're going to be doing that in a bipartisan basis. I think a bill that Senator Durbin and I, along with Senator Alexander and Murray have, will be part of the bill we pass next week that will start a quick view of our medical supply chain from pharmaceuticals to medical devices to just the protective equipment we need in the healthcare delivery system.
I was going to ask you about that, Senator. What are your concerns about America's medical supply chain that caused you to sponsor this bill?
Well, I think the supply chain has dramatically globalized on all fronts in the last two decades. Generally, that's a good thing. Being economically competitive, putting the most efficient set of parts together is normally a good thing. But when you've got China, for instance, saying we're going to stop sending these component pharmaceutical parts out of our country, or when you realize that too much of our protective equipment comes from one place, I think we need to understand that better and in all likelihood assure that we're more diverse in our options. One of those diverse options, obviously, make it ourselves, which is what the president's always for.
Mm-hmm.
And another is to be sure that we have multiple places to go so that we haven't become dependent. And it's not just, Steve, we're going to ask first that the National Science Foundation look at this first and quickly from a healthcare perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, also from a greater economic perspective, if you've got something that has 299 parts, 300 parts, and you've got 299 of them, but the 300th one comes from somewhere else and you can't get it, suddenly you can't do what your enterprise is
right.
designed for you to be able to do. So this is a good time to think about that. But, you know, a couple of thoughts here. I was talking to a group earlier today. Share some good news. I said, well, there are two good things of good news that I think we ought to be thinking about. One is coronavirus 19, COVID-19, is almost totally unimpactful on children.
Yes.
Unless there is a child that has a significant other problem already, and we know who those children are almost always, no child anywhere in the world has died as a result of this.
And what's the other piece of good news, Senator?
The other piece of good news is you know who you are. So if you're somebody who is not just older is not really the criteria here, but older with a compromised health situation anyway, you know that, and you should treat yourself that way. You should know that you can't necessarily do what everybody else you go to church with does, or what everybody else at work does, and you know how to protect. You know that you should take.
Senator, we may have lost you here. I want to thank Missouri Senator Roy Blunt for taking some time with us today. Now joining us is Kansas City Mayor Quentin Lucas. Mayor, always good to have you.
It's good to be with you, Steve.
No, you've indicated that you and other officials may make some last-minute changes to the city budget aimed at providing relief to individuals and businesses hurt by the coronavirus. What's the latest on that package, and what kind of aid are you looking at, Mayor?
You know, I think what we are first looking at is to address some of our own budget forecasts and add in, frankly, some austerity measures to make sure we'll have the money to operate. Yesterday, we did approve $250,000 for one of our homeless shelters. We understand much more is needed, and we're going to look to the private sector to be a part of this with us. So I expect at the end of the week, you'll be hearing more from us about a few plans we have rolling out to help support a lot
that's
of
that's the restart shelter you're talking about. We've done segments on that here, right?
Yeah, that's correct. That's the restart shelter, and we'll look to add more support in the days ahead.
The city doesn't have resources like the federal government, which is a way of saying that you can't print money down at City Hall.
Right.
How large a package are you looking at here?
You know, the answer is no, we do not have the ability to print money at City Hall. So a lot of what we have to do are tax breaks in certain situations, waiver of fees. What we're trying to do is bring together all the ways that we can make it easier for business and individuals to weather this crisis without additional expenses from local government. There have been other American cities that have been able to establish $50,000 grants, one-off, that sort of thing. That is, in essence, what we've been looking to try to create. We don't have a full answer on it yet, but that's what we're trying to build.
You've said that Kansas Cityans have already been impacted by this slowing economy. What are you seeing across the city right now, Mayor?
Well, there have been hundreds of layoffs. So what we've got are more businesses, both the certainly hospitality, restaurants, tons of other industries, entertainment, that have been impacted. I think this next week we're going to see more folks that are dealing with issues relating to staying home with children, to not having a paycheck this month. So it's really hitting, in many ways, every sector of the economy.
I was going to say, your concerns about small businesses and restaurants as this crisis continues to unfold, what would those be? And how can you help?
Well, you know, one is simply that they're closed and they're not making money now. But I think a more fundamental concern I have is that, you know, it's not as easy as waving a magic wand and everybody just goes back to work as normal. If you've gotten a few months behind, if you had big bills before and you weren't able to catch them, I'm concerned that there are some businesses that won't be coming back. And so that's the sort of thing. And frankly, that's the sort of help we're trying to give. You know, yesterday at City Council, we had a talk about let's get stopgap funding. But and more than just throwing a bunch of money out, you got to make sure you're getting it to the folks who need it most for their survival.
So again, to be clear, you're looking at some sort of package to help small businesses. Is that sort of in the works right now?
That is in the works right now. I don't think we'll be swift enough to get it done today. Perhaps not even next week, unfortunately. As you know, we are working under an emergency declaration, so I have the opportunity to actually try to be a bit more flexible and work with the city manager. We also have several unrestricted funds in the city budget that I'd like to reserve for this sort of situation.
Are you looking at outright grants to small businesses and restaurants, or would it be loans, or do you even know what you're looking at yet?
I think it would be more in the grant approach. It's very hard, however, for the city to just give money to individuals or businesses without some broader process. So the unfortunate thing of bureaucracies is we have to set that up. But now, absolutely, we would look to grants, we would look to fee waivers, we would look to extensions of timelines to try to make sure people can weather it from a local government perspective as best as possible. And in our social safety network, making sure that folks like Restart, so many others, can actually survive during this storm.
Are you able, do you have millions of dollars at your disposal here, Mayor, or is it something less than that, given, again, we're talking about a city budget as opposed to a federal budget?
We do not have in any way near the money that the federal government has to try to weather the crisis. I would say to the extent we can piece it together, you're looking at the low single digits millions. You are not looking at a robust, you know, $10, $20, $100 million package. So, frankly, they would be small grants. They'd have to be spent judiciously. And, frankly, it would look to us to really try to invest where our money may get the best kind of return to impact the highest number of people.
So, bottom line is you can only help so many people.
I think that's correct, Steve.
Yeah. Is it too much to say that Kansas City will emerge from this crisis, Mayor, as a different city from what it is today?
I don't think it is. I think this surprised many of us in a lot of different ways. Now, most of us listening remember 9/11 and remember how after that you saw our country, our economy largely bounce back. But there was also kind of this short-term thing where you had to get past it. And I think the challenge for us right now is that this is a bit of a rolling crisis. For those of us on the Missouri side, how long are the schools closed? What does that look like? What is the long-term business impact? Frankly, for those of us in government, what's long-term impact on revenue? Does the hotel and motel industry return the same way at all? Does travel return the same? So I think there's going to be lots for us to redefine for the future. And I think that's why you're seeing such deep thought right now, and so many of us trying to get it right.
Again, Kansas City Mayor Quentin Lucas is my guest. For the record, we have 2 confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Kansas City, or do you have any updates this morning?
You know, we still have 2 confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Kansas City, but as I said at a press conference yesterday, particularly given that some of the earlier cases were travel-based, that means that we know that the folks who flew back to Kansas City, who lived in Johnson County, came through KCI. They would have interacted with lots of folks. So frankly, I think like you're seeing in New York City right now, where when you have enhanced testing, you see the numbers jump. I fear that's the same case we have in Kansas City and our entire region.
I'm wondering about your frustrations at the lack of available testing here in Kansas City and in so many communities across the country.
You know, I've said since I was running for office, Steve, I'm not one of the yells at Washington or our state capitals, but I am frustrated. They matter. We have needed more emphasis on this issue for weeks, not just the last 2 days. And I'm glad to hear, I think the president is now recognizing this week the level of pandemic that we're dealing with. But I think it has had a negative impact on our ability to stem this crisis. Frankly, it's had a negative impact on people seeing the seriousness of this. I include myself in this. When folks don't know how broad it is, when you're hearing single-digit cases, when you're hearing it's in essence not that big a deal, you take one approach. Whereas when you see the types of numbers that are shooting up in the west and east coast of our country, certainly over in Europe, then you recognize what we're confronting. And I think only now is that lesson being spread nationally. And I think that has been unfortunate. I think it's vital we get more testing soon.
Now, you expressed frustration last weekend at the number of young people who were out in Westport on a Saturday night. There's some frustration in Florida right now about young people congregating on beaches. I'm just wondering, do you have any sense, is that improved, or are you still feeling some frustration that the message isn't getting out to all members of our community?
You know, I'm not sure the message is getting out yet, although I think we've certainly taken measures to address that. But I'm reminded of this. In the book And the Band Played On by Randy Schultz about the early AIDS crisis, there was the pressure to close the bathhouses. And initially there was a significant pushback in San Francisco and lots of other places. And part of that is that I think you have to make sure in any public health crisis, you're explaining why, right? If people think you are just shutting things down, if there's no real rationale behind it, if there's not an emergency, if the president of the United States is saying, saying there's not an emergency, then, you know, I'm not actually going to throw stones at a 20-year-old who's saying this was the best spring break of my life. I think the issue for all of us in government, all of us in public life, frankly, is to share with them why it is so important, not necessarily to take the shaming approach, but to instead say, this is a significant deal. It's one that can change the face of our country for years to come, and that everybody has to participate in the solution.
You know, you've taken the extraordinary steps of making an emergency declaration and then expanding it in the last week. You've banned gatherings of more than 10 people, closed movie theaters, and prohibited restaurants from offering dine-in services. What's your sense today? How is the city taking to that, Mayor? How are residents responding?
I think, well, you know, I think last week when the Big 12 tournament was called off, you heard the first groans. I think last executive order, 1,000-person events, there were some folks that said this is awful. Every now and then, because I've given my cell phone to the whole city, I'll get a text message or a call from somebody who says, oh, you're destroying business. But I think most get it. Most get that this is something that is essential, that's necessary, and that we're all going to try to figure out a way to work through it. And I think the information is getting out there for folks. I was concerned because early last weekend, there were folks in different communities that I don't know if they listened to Up to Date or Central Standard. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not sure they were catching all of the needs. I think we've done a better job of getting that message more broadly. Folks are a little scared, but I think they understand why we're doing what we're doing, and that leads to better compliance.
I'm just putting myself in your shoes a little bit. You're making these decisions, I'm sure, very, very quickly. How difficult a call is it to declare and to make an emergency declaration?
It was very challenging because, you know, Kansas City, Missouri, was a little bit out front. I believe we declared an emergency certainly before Missouri, but a few hours before Kansas. And then my office, made the choice to close the schools in Kansas City, which functionally closed all the school districts in the Kansas City metro on the Missouri side. That was another one that was very serious. In times like this, you know, leadership from our higher levels of government is helpful. To the extent it's wanting, then we realize there are important calls we have to make, and we try to do those as best as possible, knowing that there is a broad diversity in viewpoints, even among health professionals in our country. And this has been a very challenging few days. I'm lucky to have very good support. You know, today in City Council, we're talking about a budget. I know half my colleagues are quarantined. Half my colleagues hate the fact we're voting on it. The other half think it's essential that we actually do our job and pass the budget. And, these are just some challenging times for all of us, but we need to make sure government remains open, that people know that they can come to the city for some support and guidance during this time.
So as the mayor of a major American city, what worries you the most today? What's keeping you up at night?
Our poorer population. I think so far the way that this virus has spread, it has largely impacted folks that have been able to get, I think, quick emergency medical help, hospitals, et cetera. What I'm scared of is, what if this impacts our homeless population disproportionately? What if this impacts our most at-risk populations that at the time of any health crisis are largely underserved? I'm terrified of that, frankly, because I don't think we have a solution for that yet. And I think if there was an outbreak at X or Y shelter tomorrow, if there was an outbreak in a homeless population in a camp or a community, I think those are folks already with largely weakened immune systems, and it could be very traumatic. And I think containing the spread would be equally challenging because of this. So many of our social services deliveries require us to be communal. We have soup kitchens, we have shelters. You go to places for it. When we lose those, we lose not just so much of our infrastructure to feed people and to house people and to clothe them, but to also take care of them if they're sick.
KCUR's Lisa Rodriguez reported yesterday, Mayor, on a council committee meeting that was rife with technological issues. What happened there, and have you gotten that situation resolved?
Well, I was exceedingly frustrated yesterday with the council meeting, and I think the short answer is I've been told that it's all better. I'm going to go upstairs to City Hall and check it myself, and I think it reflects that everybody says you're ready for things, but we're not. enough.
And we're talking about connecting remotely with your council members. That's what we're talking about here. Yeah,
that's correct. That's correct. The state statutes require us to either meet in a public room in the open, right, as normal, or you can do it by video conference. The video conference system was not working. It took about 40 to 50 minutes for it to get up to work. I think that is incredibly disappointing. I think the city, which has a $1.7 billion budget, should be better equipped to do it. And ultimately, the way we did it was that I just, you know, put my cell phone on a conference call, and then myself and Councilwoman Catherine Shields were in the room, and our colleagues are speaking up as time went on. We clearly need to do better. I expect much better today.
Mayor, just a final thing. Several of your council members are under self-quarantine. Have you thought about the possibility that you might need a self-quarantine yourself at some point?
You know, at this point, I have not considered that first because I did not really interact with any of those folks that had gone off to D.C., and I respect their self-quarantine choice right now. And for the most part, I've been at City Hall for the last however many days in the mayor's office, trying to make sure we're handling this well. So I have not had the usual exposure to the public that a public official would have. It, you know, is in many ways regrettable, but at the same time, understandable. And so right now, I don't think that's essential, but I will always take the proper medical advice as we go on to make sure we're not putting anyone in City Hall or in our city at risk.
Mayor, always appreciate your time. Sure appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve.
You bet. That's Kansas City Mayor Quentin Lucas. Will be checking with him as we progress through this pandemic. After a short break, when we come back, getting help for folks and employees who have lost their jobs and been laid off in recent days. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And welcome back to Up to Date special coverage, coronavirus in Kansas City. I'm Steve Kraske. The steps being taken to minimize social contact and the spread of the novel coronavirus are now causing some employees to be working fewer hours, getting laid off, or losing their jobs completely. People are suddenly faced with what that means to pay bills, get groceries, make the rent or the car payment, or the mortgage. Word is the federal government could be preparing to send checks to each of us, but what can people do to prepare for what is suddenly a very new reality? Turns out the answer is a lot. With us today are three representatives from the Community Services League of Jackson County. That's an organization that provides help to people in need. Mayor Lucas was just talking about this group of individuals, and the folks I have with me here in front of me from the Community Services League are Doug Cowan. He's the CEO. Doug, good morning to you.
Good morning, Steve.
Amber Bauer is Vice President of Housing Services. Amber, nice to have you.
Good morning.
Rachel Barker is Vice President of Financial Coaching. Rachel.
Good morning. Thank you.
If you have found yourself with what is a new employment situation that came on very suddenly and have questions about how to prepare for the road ahead, you can call us right now, 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. Doug, the timing of this is fortuitous. The mayor was just talking about folks who find themselves in need very suddenly here. Tell us about the Community Services League, because I'm betting that a lot of people haven't heard of it. What do you do? How do you help people?
Well, Community Services League does a lot of things, is what we like to say. Everything from basic needs, financial coaching, housing services, employment coaching. We really run the gamut of social services. We've got a total of 14 locations between Jackson and Clay counties. Some of those are just food pantries. We run a feeding program. Some of our sites are employment only. So we do a lot of things, but I think it's important. It's a great time to be having this conversation. The good news that I would tell the listeners is Kansas City is well known for its social support systems. And even though these are uneasy times, I would tell folks not to panic, that there are good supports in place. We're thrilled to be here to talk about some of those that exist.
I was going to say, what you do is really hitting the sweet spot in terms of where a lot of Kansas Cityans find themselves all of a sudden right now.
Yeah. And we saw as things started to get a little crazy around town, we saw the run on grocery stores and those types of things, and there was a little bit of panic involved. And I would advise folks that we're seeing good support from government level, good community support, very generous support from folks. There are going to be supports available. The key thing is helping the folks to navigate them. But while everybody's situation is different, I would say take a breath. There are people like CSL and other great organizations out there that can help you navigate the challenges that you're facing.
Again, if our listeners need help and are wondering what might be available, our number 816-235-2888 or tweet us at KCUR UpToDate. Amber, we're going to be talking this morning about what folks should do if they get behind in their payments, either with a landlord or a car loan. There's a theme here, I think, that's going to emerge in our conversation that your organization emphasizes, which is to communicate early and often with the lender about your situation and what you can do. Tell us about that, because that's a really key point here.
Yeah, I think that's what folks need to remember is communication's key. So if you find yourself not being able to make the full payment or no payment at all, just to communicate that, call your landlord. Call your bank, call your lending company, set up a payment plan, because the thing is, the payment's not going away. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be there at the end of the day. So how can we get in front of it when we feel like we're drowning? So always set up a small something to make that end payment less.
I think a lot of people hesitate to make that call for very understandable reasons. They feel like a failure. They think they're going to get balled out. What can you advise them about what that conversation might sound like?
You're not alone. You're mm-hmm. not the only one having this fear, and you're not the only one trying to figure out what to pay and what not to pay.
Yeah.
Landlords are aware of this. Lenders are aware of this, but they also have businesses. So don't feel like you're not being able to do what you need to do. Just really communicate what you're trying to still keep up with.
You know, Rachel, communicating is tougher as so many offices close. That means, you know, a lot of folks don't have a phone. They don't have a smartphone. They don't have the internet. What can they do when the libraries are closed? What are you guys advising?
That's a really good question. There are some good companies out there that are offering, you know, free internet, free Wi-Fi. Xfinity, they have started expanding their services to free Wi-Fi. And for low-income families, they are now able to sign up for a free internet if they can access that at home. So I would say get in touch with those companies.
But again, the message that you guys are giving us today is that a lot of lenders will work with you if you reach out to them. And again, I think that might surprise some people. They think they've got to make the payment.
Right, absolutely. And there's a lot of good communication coming out from banks and credit unions on what their customers are supposed to be doing. So I encourage people to search that information out, reach out. Like Amber said, you're not alone in this. And these banks, they do have plans for people. They simply do have to make that phone call.
I'm repeating here, but be proactive. As Amber said, get out in front of this mm-hmm. thing. Don't wait on your situation.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah.
And Steve, I would add real
please,
quick,
Doug.
There's been a lot. We tell folks that catching the things coming from the federal government, state government, county, local government is kind of like drinking from a fire hose. But we're trying to be out there and be a good source of information. And so it's important to note that in some of the legislation that has been passed, the president signed a bill, an order that no FHA, Federal Housing Administration, insured mortgages or FHA-backed reverse mortgages can be foreclosed upon until May 18th at the earliest.
So that's explain that in layman's language. What does that mean to people?
Well, you either have a lot of people have an FHA-backed mortgage. Almost every reverse mortgage is backed by the FHA. And so if you are one of those millions of Americans that have that, now the federal government has said that lender cannot legally foreclose upon you. So I think it's important during these times, too, that folks, if they are able to access information, that they know their rights. And then additional action is being taken. So our the folks listening over on the Kansas side, Governor Kelly has signed.
I was just going to ask you about evictions, right?
Yeah. And so her order is that no one in the state of Kansas can be evicted, and that's commercial or residential evictions, or foreclosed upon until May 1st at the very earliest. So one of the things that we always tell folks, and we know that we need to be a clearinghouse for this information, is know your rights. Make sure that you know what your rights are, and make sure you ask those questions. So, and just like any industry, an informed consumer is a very good consumer. So know your rights. If you have an FHA-backed mortgage or reverse mortgage, or if you're in the state of Kansas, know that you cannot be evicted or foreclosed upon.
So if you're a renter in Kansas, just to reiterate here, you can't lose your apartment between now and May 1st based on the order that Governor Kelly just signed.
That's correct. I believe that is Executive Order 20-06. As I was reviewing that, I think came out earlier this week. So that's important news for folks to know.
Rachel, I think a question that might be for you here from Helen on Twitter. If you are not yet, but likely to be soon, I guess laid off, what should you do with the cash you do have?
With the cash that you do have, you know, I think it goes back to looking at what your expenses are on a regular monthly payment. Because like Amber said, those bills aren't going to go away, you know, tomorrow and next month. And so to start planning out what you can do with the cash that you have now.
What do you prioritize? What bills should you pay first?
Get in touch with, you know, your landlord or your mortgage company, because housing definitely comes first. Take a look at the utility bills that you have so you can keep the heat on right now and the AC coming soon, and get in touch with utility companies if you feel like you're going to need to make some sort of a payment arrangement with them. But definitely, you know, conserve cash as much as you can. And I think one thing that, you know, we have seen also is people that are just panic buying a lot of things that they might not need right now, but think that they might need in the future. You know, stick to a budget whenever you go grocery shopping and whenever you're making a plan for what you're going to cook for the week. It's all of those smart things that you would do with your day-to-day budgeting in a normal life, and just to keep on doing those things to conserve your money.
Just to be crystal here, does it go without saying that housing and food sort of come first, and then maybe in a third tier would be utilities?
I would say that's a good assessment.
What do we know from what are you guys hearing from the utility companies in terms of what's being what they're going to offer consumers right now in terms of avoiding shutoffs of services, that kind of thing, Doug?
Yeah, so three of the biggest utility providers here in the Kansas City area are Evergy, Independence Power and Light, which is municipal utility service in Independence, as well as Spire. They have all ceased shutoff. So nobody is going to be shut off at this point. However, Amber brought this up earlier, that one of the things that we've seen during these times, and there's been sporadic in the past, but when utility companies have said no shutoffs, sometimes people see that as, oh, well, I just don't have to pay. The reality is, it is best to keep paying what you can, because there will be a time where shutoffs will be implemented again. Mm-hmm. And what may be a $100, $150 bill today, 3 months down the road, could be a $500 to $600, maybe even a $1,000 plus bill. So we encourage folks not to see this as a reason to not pay, but to go ahead and keep paying. If your income is been diminished at all, keep paying what you can, but don't ignore it completely.
And Amber, again, to repeat, if you're communicating, if you're paying what you can, that might serve you well in the long run once May and June and the summer months come along.
Absolutely. And I think it's critical, like Rachel mentioned a minute ago, like turn off when you can. Yes, we are expecting a cold front today and tomorrow, but when you can turn your heat off, turn it off. Mm-hmm. Don't turn your, you know, air on until you absolutely have to. Open the windows, utilize a fan. Just really be resourceful. And it's times like this that people may not have had to think about these things in the past, but be proactive.
Yeah. We have a email here from Brian, who called to say he had a 2-hour phone wait getting through to T-Mobile yesterday. And he's wondering what we've already talked about, what people can do if they don't have a computer or smartphone. But the point here is, are people, are consumers able to get through to the utility companies and have these conversations? Or are we looking at 2-hour waits every time someone tries to be responsible?
I think the waits are going to be long, yes, because I think a lot of people are in that frantic mode.
Yeah.
And I would just say, as much as you can do electronically via email, I know they all have help portals, support portals, try to go that route as well.
Yeah.
I know that some of the bigger cellular phone distributors are not doing shutoffs right now either. So I think it's all about education. You just get on your provider's website and see what they can do.
Go ahead.
There's also government-assisted phones for individuals that can't afford cell phones.
Where do they go to get one of those?
Online, once again, and they are smartphones, so then you do have the accessibility to a lot of the websites to do your research that you can't go to the library for right now. So there's multiple vendors out there. There's QLink, there's SafeLink. So there's resources out there that some folks may not know are available that really do come in dire need right now.
Do you have information about that on the Community Services League website if people want to go find out information about free free phones.
Yeah, and they can leave us an they can use our Twitter hashtag or Twitter handle, excuse me, at CSL Cares. We'll be happy to follow up with them directly with additional information. But we do have a list of resources, www.cslcares.org. We're also working on a specific dedicated site right now that will help provide additional guidance for folks. And we would be remiss, of course, we are pleased to be a United Way partner agency. And I know folks around here hear this all the time, but it is a great place to start if you're looking for assistance to call 211. That's all you have to dial, 211, and you'll be connected 24 hours a day to a call center that's based here in the Kansas City area with wonderful, fantastic navigators that can help talk you through a situation. So it's a great resource we have in Kansas City.
I was going to say, we talked yesterday on the show about 211 as a place to go. We're talking today with Community Services League representatives. I'm just sitting here thinking there's a lot of stuff for people to have to navigate here. This is all coming at people very, very quickly. Again, they can get help by coming to you folks, and they can get help by going to 211, but it's a big bite of the apple right now for a lot of people.
It is. A word that I would put out, this part of what we're going through right now as a community feels like it did 10, 12 years ago during the recession.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that there is a percentage of the population that is usually reliant or needs specific social supports to help survive. And we're glad that in Kansas City we have that strong social support network. What we're going to be seeing, we are seeing now and will be seeing in the future, just like we did during the recession, is a whole new cadre of folks that are going to be accessing supports. And so I would encourage folks that are listening that if you find yourself, maybe you've never had to access a food pantry, a housing counselor, a financial coach, an employment service, whatever that might be, I would encourage folks, we see the best results when people are more proactive. And Steve, you mentioned it earlier that some people might feel ashamed, like I've done something wrong, I've got to reach out for help. If people reach out, there are things out there and we can help make what could seem a challenging situation seem a little less challenging. Where things kind of go wrong is when folks, it's sort of like going to the doctor. If you avoid going for months or years, things can get really
bad. Sitting on the couch and watching TV, you're saying, may not be the best option right now is what you're saying.
Yeah, because that situation that you're in, if it's challenging right now, in 3-4 weeks, 3-4 months, it could be really, really challenging.
Let me go to some phone calls here at 816-235-2888 or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Kathleen from Midtown, good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to make a comment. In 2008, I lost my job and my husband became paralyzed, paraplegic, and I struggled with my mortgage and I caught up, but I could never fully catch up. And I had over $6,000 of late fees, which I still have because I'm not going to pay them, because you get behind on one. And you pay the next month, and they keep charging you that late fee every month because you can't catch all the way up. I just think that kind of financial behavior should be outlawed.
Are we seeing any of these? I appreciate the phone call, Kathleen. Are we seeing any of these lenders sort of relax those late fees as we go into this time of crisis, Rachel?
Yes, I definitely have seen lots of different emails from banks and credit unions about what kind of late fees that they are waiving. I just saw an email this morning about a mortgage lender that they are deferring mortgage payments for up to 120 days. I believe it was car payments for up to 120 days, letting you overdraft your account with no fee. So I do feel like that there are some good things that are happening. And I imagine that good things are happening because that the 2008 financial crisis was so bad that there was a lot of things that were put in place to protect consumers, especially mortgage holders.
I can't help but note this morning that jobless claims across the country have jumped 70% in recent days. They've popped up a third here in the Kansas City area. And Victoria on Twitter is writing us to ask, Kansas unemployment is too busy to be reached. What do you recommend for filing?
Well, I know that they have their online portal, and I don't know if there's a magic fix to that. We are seeing systems stressed right now. Our local community-based supports are feeling stressed. You look at our school districts are stressed on how they are getting not only educational materials, but also food items to families in need. And you look at government systems like unemployment are going to be stressed. And I know that doesn't make the situation better, but folks are going to have to be patient to help navigate the system. But we always encourage folks to be your best advocate. And if you're having a hard time advocating on your behalf, get in touch with somebody. Call your local organization that you've worked with in the past, or you can call an agency like Community Services League. We talked a lot about housing today, and that's an area where a lot of people don't necessarily know what their rights are. The law can be complicated, especially around mortgage or eviction. In Kansas City, we have a lot of HUD-certified housing counseling agencies, of which Community Services League is one of those. People can go to HUD.gov. HUD.gov and find a housing counselor, or they can call us at Community Services League at 816-254-4100. There are housing counselors throughout the metropolitan area that can just talk with folks over the phone and help cut through some of the craziness that people might be seeing.
Several people have written us to ask, do you know what are the basic requirements to qualify for unemployment, and what do they base it on? Who can help with that?
If you look at both Missouri and Kansas, basically it's job loss at no fault of yours. Mm-hmm. And so you need to just go ahead and apply. And really, both Missouri and Kansas...
apply sooner rather than later, I think I've read.
Yes. They have calculators. You can get an idea. Now, I did do a little bit of homework so I could speak knowledgeably. With Missouri, you could expect reasonably up to 20 weeks of unemployment support if you are approved. At most, somebody will make about $320 a week. In Kansas, you might expect 16 to 26 weeks of unemployment. I believe the 26 weeks is it takes some special legislation, so I think it's closer to the 16 to 20 week. But in Kansas, somewhere between $122 a week and $488. And the amount of your unemployment benefit depends on how much you were working at the time that you were laid off. But again, for folks that we've had a period of really low unemployment the last several years, and this will be new ground for a lot of folks. So we encourage them to, if they are facing unemployment, to go ahead and reach out to the state of Kansas or the state of Missouri.
Sounds good. Let me go back to some calls here. Mike from Overland Park. Mike, you're on the show.
Hi. It's interesting to hear about the unemployment, but I'm thinking there have to be companies who are going to be short-staffed. One that comes to mind is Amazon. You know, there's going to be tons more deliveries. So I just wonder if any local, regional, for-profit, non-profit entities are setting up to match healthy workers who want to work with a few companies that might need them.
That's a great question, Mike, because you're right. Amazon and lots of employers are picking up lots of workers right now. What do we know about that?
Yeah, so that's a great point. And, you know, we're in a period of there's a lot of things that we don't know. You know, some of the best case scenario that I see is perhaps our recovery is V-shaped, where there's been a steep decline in economic productivity, but then hopefully there would rebound quickly, so in the shape of a V, and that a lot of people would be able to go back to work quickly. But the reality is there may be a lot of people that need to be retrained or connected with workers. At Community Services League, we run two job training programs. We have pathways in construction trades as well as healthcare, so we graduate folks with welding, also CNA, certified nursing assistants. I will tell you, one of the challenges we're having, Steve, is that our nursing classes right now have had to be temporarily, because of the COVID-19, they've had to be suspended. So
at a time when nurses are needed more than ever.
Correct. So we're working on trying to figure out how we scale those back up quickly. But yes, Community Services League and others in the area are well positioned to be matchmakers, if you will, to connect with employers and then eligible employees. And so I think once we get out of this several week period where we're essentially all hunkered down, that I'm hopeful that we'll have a lot of opportunity this spring to be connecting or reconnecting workers to employment opportunities in our area.
You know, Rachel, we talked earlier about foreclosures being put off in some cases, but the mortgage crisis of the early 2000s resulted in some new rules about when a lender can foreclose on a property to even to begin with. there are steps that banks now have to take in an effort to reduce the number of foreclosures. Tell us about that.
Yes, there are steps that the mortgage companies have to take. The first step is working directly with the client, and the goal is never to foreclose on behalf of the mortgage holder. So they will go through lots of different steps, either deferring payments, making some sort of payment arrangement, a reduced payment, so people can catch up. And there are lots of, and I'm not going to quote any exact time period because I can't recall that off the top of my head, but there are time periods that mortgage companies do have to work with and before any type of foreclosure can ever start.
Do these new rules address those late fees that we talked about earlier with our phone caller?
They do not, as far as I know.
You know, Amber, is one type of loan typically more difficult to work out some kind of arrangement with if you fall behind? I mean, a car loan, for instance, or a home equity loan. What do you think? Rachel, take that one, too.
I think at this time, it's just going to depend financial institution to financial institution what's going to be, you know, easier to resolve. Our hope is that everybody is very cognizant of the situation, so they know that there are people in need and that really do need the deferments that could be available. So I'm not sure yet if one's going to be easier to work with than another. I feel like we'll probably be seeing that.
It's not lost on me either that interest rates are dropping right now. Just quickly, there might be some opportunities to save money on that end as well.
You know, that is really not my expertise, so right. I'm not sure about that.
But possibly, Doug.
Yeah, absolutely. I will. My wife and I have looked at refinancing our house. So, yeah, as rates are dropping, if people are in a position to do that. But again, I think the theme for today has been be proactive in outreaching. Same thing with your bank, your mortgage holder, whoever that is. Be proactive during these early times.
A good way to wrap this up. I want to thank our representatives from the Community Services League of Jackson County, Doug Cowan, Amber Bauer, and Rachel Barker. Thank you all very much. Good luck with the heavy workload ahead. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay, that's it for today. We'll be back tomorrow. You're listening to Up to Date Special Coverage Coronavirus in Kansas City. I'm Steve Kraske.